Listener-supported, volunteer-powered, we are KBOV Bend, Oregon, and this is Merle Evers.
The views and opinions expressed during the following show are solely those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect that of KPOV or High Desert Community Radio.
She's a real woman with a real life. She's someone you can relate to. Open Air with Dawn Newton.
You don't know me. You don't know me. I can hold fire in my hand, call the rain.
Hey, welcome, everyone. This is Open Air. I'm your host, Dawn Newton. You're listening to 889 KPOV, your High Desert Community Radio, where we are streaming live online 24 hours a day at KPOV. You can find us on all the social platforms, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. That would be KPOV Bend. You can find me there as well, Dawn Newton. Coming up on today's show, we're going to be talking about, I'm going to do some loose, I guess, description of what we're talking about. We're going to be doing some deep dive here, and I've got an expert sitting across from me. I'm a little fangirling about it just because I have worked her book, and it was like 7 or 8 years ago, and continue to work it. And the author just happens to be in Bend this week, and happened to have today free, and I just happened to say, can you please come in the studio so we can talk about you and your work? You know, when we talk about healing from PTSD due to childhood trauma, what does that even mean? Well, Julie Valenti is here to talk about that, and we're going to talk about her book, Knowing How, and childhood trauma. And so I guess as an adult, and I'll be concerned sorting with my expert here in just a moment, but patterns that get in your way, as an adult, are things getting in your way? Are you having issues? Things that get in your way of living the life that you thought you should be living, that healthy, functioning, happy life. And I'm not talking rose-colored glasses type life, but just a healthy life, a healthy relationship, healthy family, healthy job. All those things, are things getting in your way? Are there patterns that are stopping you from doing that? Are we talking relationships? Maybe we're talking multiple marriages. How about alcohol, some substance, maybe some self-sabotage, and you're not quite sure where those patterns came from or how to stop them? Well, that's what Julie's here to talk about. And again, talking about, self-disclosure, I have worked with a counselor in Portland for quite a few years, and she introduced me to Julie's work. So again, when the author came to town, we snatched her up, and she's sitting across from me. So stay with us. We have a lot to talk about in the next 55 minutes or so, and I'm really excited to introduce you to Julie Valenti. So we have a couple little segments, some little promos to play, and we come back. It's going to be All Things Knowing How with Julie Valenti. So please stay tuned. Hey, welcome back, everyone. This is Open Air. I'm your host, Dawn Newton. I have a special guest in studio, and I am so excited to have her in studio and to meet her in person and talk about her work. Her book is Knowing How, 20 Concepts to Rewire the Brain, Lasting Recovery from PTSD Due to Childhood Trauma. Julie Valenti, I appreciate you being here today. I appreciate your friends sparing you and letting you come in on, because I'm sure you're probably out having some really good fun.
It's beautiful. Bend has just turned lovely. It's very cold, but I'm here from San Diego.
San Diegoan. Let's talk about just a little bit about Julie Valenti, how you've been in this field. I was reading just 30 plus years, if not maybe.
30 plus years. Mm-hmm.
And doing this. How this got started for you. I mean, in reading your bio, and you talk a lot about yourself in the book, too, in the beginning.
Not too much, I hope.
No, I'm not. No, enough
to talk about myself.
The relatability, which I think is so important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That you're like, no, you've lived it, you've walked it,
right.
You've experienced it, and this is how you've applied it.
Right.
Which I think helps us so much when we're doing this work ourselves. Mm-hmm. But how this got started for you, I know you were a nurse at one point.
Right.
And how it, because this work, without sounding too dramatic or, too puffy about it, but it has changed my life.
Yes, that's one of the most common things I hear is
right.
this work has changed my life. Sometimes people will leave after doing this work and say, I can never be the same parent again if you have children, because it really has, it's an education as much as anything else. And that sort of leads me into the title of the program that I actually run. Was running it in Portland, Oregon. Now it's online, so anybody can schedule appointments or come to webinars or classes or,
And that's Wisdom in Recovery.
That is Wisdom in Recovery.
Now, you have a certificate in addiction studies from JFK University of Psychology. You're also certified hypnotherapist, ordained minister, studied psychology trauma at the Ross Institute, and specializes in helping people who have experienced early childhood trauma. You're also a featured speaker in drug alcohol centers throughout Oregon and Washington. Are you still doing that?
I am, yes.
Still very
and now,
active.
And now San Diego also, now so, in California.
She's sure. expanding.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you'll ever be out of clients.
Yes.
Which is unfortunate to say.
When I work with people, it's really important that they're actually doing the work. I actually sort of try to veer away from calling it work because I say what the real work is trying to live a fulfilling life when you've got a back tape running that is about, I don't know who I am, I don't know what I'm about, I've turned into somebody that I hardly recognize myself. That's work. When you start doing this, this is like a whole life. This is like a whole rebirth, awakening. So, but we do call it the work, you know, in the industry.
Yes.
That's what people are familiar with.
That is absolutely a fact when doing this type of work. And I can speak from experience on that. Mm-hmm. When you start tapping into and start peeling back those layers, things that you don't even know are in there.
Well, right.
That, you know, it's that subconscious, which that has always been a frustration for me. It's like, well, if it's my subconscious, why can't I control it?
Right.
Why is
right.
it, you know, why are you sneaking up on me and doing things that I know better?
Yeah. So you know, that is things. The goal ultimately is to make the subconscious conscious. And so, but there are two different parts of the brain. You've got your survival part of the brain, and then you have your conscious part of the brain. And the rewiring is not just the kinds of tools that I'll be talking about later, but the rewiring is actually creating a rapid-firing neural pathway between the subconscious part of the brain and the conscious part of the brain. We don't think that way. We don't function that way, and the brain wasn't designed to function that way. We are literally creating neural pathways by doing this work.
From your own personal recovery from childhood trauma led you to write this book.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, I didn't even realize it was my own childhood trauma. I just had so many, you know, I had my stint of overusing drugs and alcohol. I had multiple failed relationships, and I was just pretty miserable. And I didn't like who I was, and I didn't like how I was. And so that hit my knees got me to I started out in the 12-step community, adult children of alcoholics, and then Al-Anon, and then CODA. So I did my time with the 12-step community, but I knew that there was more, something deeper. And so that's when I began to put together addiction recovery with family of origin. And then I took my medical background, and I went like, wow, this is a brain thing. And then I went like, holy crap, this is a neurological system, neurological, endocrine, circulatory, muscular. This is a whole system that is operating based on memory. You know, we have a memory organism. The heart remembers to beat, the digestive juices remember to flow into the gut. You know, this is a whole, we've got memory all the way to the cellular level. Then we start getting into PTSD and triggers, and all of that is addressed in the book.
So would you say that you were your first client or first patient when it came to that?
Yes, I absolutely was. That's why I developed this entire program, was because I worked it for a while and started seeing results myself. And then I started working with people and I started saying, well, here's what I did and here's what I did. And pretty soon it was like, I sat down and I thought, well, let me write down all the things that I really have done that has changed my life. And as I began to write down, I ended up with about 20, right, things that I really looked at, studied about myself, and used what kinds of tools. And it's an eclectic toolbox. It's got spirituality. It's got Buddhism. It's got 12-step components. It's got medical, physical anatomy and physiology. It's got brain science. I mean, so it's a whole lot packed into a pretty small book. How many pages does this book have, anyways?
That's one thing that I always find
200 pages
interesting is when we talk about trauma, childhood trauma, PTSD. As I said before we went on air, it just feels like such a heavy thing that we're carrying that the book should be just as heavy, if not heavier.
Right.
And so that's one thing is like, isn't it amazing that this rewiring is only so many pages long?
Right, right. And I really stay away from big, you know, I'm not talking about the hippocampus and the amygdala. And there's no point. Like, it just is a waste of time to be reading all the things. There's really only things in here that are really going to help you. And I say the book is written so that a 10-year-old could read it. And we should have learned all this before we ever walked out of our family's home.
Oh, I can't.
So people that don't have PTSD can benefit from reading these concepts. Yeah, there's 20 of them that I came up with.
And I think the thing, too, at least for me when working through the book, is that heaviness, because it's like, oh, here comes all those feelings, mm-hmm. which can really, I mean, there were times it was like, I got to step away. I just got to go, like, pivot, just put on some loud music, get outside. Let me just kind of recalibrate myself. Mm-hmm. And because there's a lot that you learn, and it's not so much that it was, I don't even want to say the word traumatic, or it was just like, wow, I had no idea. Yeah. Or the aha, or like, oh my God, I never thought of it that way. Mm-hmm. Or, oh, okay, so I guess this is trauma. Because even I had difficulty with that word.
Right.
So what does that mean when we want to dismiss some of that? We want to say, no, we didn't have trauma. We were no more dysfunctional than the neighbor next door.
Sure.
Which is incorrect.
Yeah. I'm going to talk about that. There's some concepts that address that. One is, what comes to mind right away is there's a concept that's called loyalty to the perpetrator. And that basically means that I am now living a life. First of all, my parents taught me who I was, how much I mattered, how much time an attachment figure should spend with me. You know, we're just like a little recorder. We're just downloading all of this information, and then we have become someone that is a fraction of who we were always meant to be. So the heaviness, I think, that you're explaining is sort of this unresolved trauma, so to speak. Even though I use the word, and even though it is officially called PTSD, the way I describe PTSD is P, for post-traumatic stress disorder. So post meaning it happened back then. So it is now after this has happened. So we got post. Traumatic is the inability to make the attachment, meaning for whatever reason, and I mean literally for whatever reason, you cannot attach to that attachment figure. Maybe they died. Maybe you were adopted and your attachment figure is not there. Maybe they have some disease and they need to be in the hospital. Maybe I talk about the young mother whose husband died, who has 3 children and has to work 2 jobs and takes a night class so that she can get out of the grunt work she's doing, minimum wage work, and she's got these 3 little children. Guess what? That's an attachment disorder. They're going to have an attachment disorder, and she's just doing the best she can. So we don't demonize our parents. That's a huge waste of time. We do talk and process the grief and loss that we have by not having available, secure, loving, involved parents in our life. But as I write in the book, chances are they didn't have that either, and you can't give what you didn't get.
When did this work start for you? You've been doing this for 30 plus years. Knowing how, when did this come to life?
Oh, people ask me, when did you start? When did you start this? And I'm like, when I was in the womb. But what I want to do, Dawn, is I want to finish just that little tiny piece of, you asked me a question, what is PTSD or what is it? So post means it happened in childhood. Traumatic is the inability to attach. You have to attach for survival. So the little organism realizes that they can't attach to the attachment figure for some reason. Of course, little children don't have much of a brain to work with because that's your brain isn't fully developed until you're about 27 years old. So you don't have, imagine when you're 2 or 7, right? You don't have that kind of brain. But the organism experiences the inability and experiences a survival threat. And then what happens is the human organism begins to secrete fight or flight hormones. And here's where the stress is. You're too little. You can't fight and you can't flight. So there's the stress. And then the disorder is when you are now an adult, everything gets out of order. A trigger will send you back to your childhood. And before you know it, you're crying, pouting, running away, hitting, yelling, you know. And these are child's behaviors. So there's the disorder. My life is out of order. Right? I keep regressing into this childlike experience emotionally. Now remember, two different parts of the brain, thinking part of the brain, then you have your feeling and your emotional and your memory part of the brain. And when that gets triggered, your thinking part of the brain goes offline. When I say rewire, again, I start saying, we want a neural pathway that keeps your intelligence online while you're having memory and the associated feeling so that you can use something to navigate and negotiate the experience that you're having. It's a life changer. You said life changing.
Oh, and it's fascinating. Mm-hmm. While you're in it, it's a little murky sometimes. Mm. And you're like, wait a minute, who am I?
Yeah.
Wait a minute. I thought I was, but here's some layers and a lot of feelings. And I think sometimes that's for those of us, I mean, know myself, and even I can say my husband, because he's worked the book too, is like, I don't want to feel all this. Like,
right.
I'm an adult now. That was then, you know, trying mm-hmm. to, but also like, you know, yeah, but how's it been working for you?
Yeah, I want to talk just for a second about what you just said, which is, who am I? And that's why I titled, so I have a program that offers individual sessions, group support groups, webinars, workshops, you know, you name it, we do it. And so this idea of who am I name my program Wisdom and Recovery. And the wisdom is a deep and profound knowledge and understanding. So it doesn't end at a deep and profound knowledge. You have to have that understanding, so you have to make it yours. You have to really get it. And I think this program, with all the education that we provide, is a real, where that knowledge is deep and profound, and you understand it, meaning you get it all the way down to your gut. And so I called it Wisdom and Recovery. Recovery is different than the 12-step community. Typically, they're recovering from the wreckage that they, you know, because like, oof, that's a whole nother, that's a whole nother talk. I won't get
lots
into
of
that
tentacles
now. But the recovery in this program is the recovery of the authentic self. Because from childhood, you are adapting and contorting and being everything you can in order to get some kind of attachment, some kind of, you know, attention and affection. And so you begin to learn different ways of being. If your parents frown or yell or hit, then you do something different. And constantly you're adapting. And then you get into, you know, your adulthood and you have become somebody that you never likely authentically were ever meant to be. And that's torture. That's why I think people start going into drugs and alcohol and gambling and sex and everything. It just hurts when you are not living your authentic life. So it's wisdom and recovery, and you want to recover that authentic self. But that person is way back, a little child. And so we take a journey together back into that childhood. You don't have to do it alone, right? I'll be there, or a clinician that works with me will be there, and we journey backwards. And where did this all begin? And you would be surprised how many little nuances contribute to a person adapting and changing and contorting to survive.
Now, and realizing how much of that pain and the experiences were not yours to own.
That's right. That's a great way of saying it.
You know, and how, you know, the voices that you hear, who is telling, you know, who am I hearing that's not, you know, if that person was standing in front of you, you'd probably tell them, you know, take a hike or maybe some other words. But that voice in your head really has a lot of power.
Yeah, that's that loyalty to the perpetrator. Mm-hmm. I stay loyal to the things that I'm holding in memory about myself. And so if my parent tells me I'm lazy and I decide to take a Saturday to lounge around, there's a little voice going, you should, you ought to. And that's that loyalty stuff. But again, that's that memory. And we have to own that memory. We have to take that memory and what is in there. And we get to change some of that memory. And that's the power of neuroplasticity. Now we get into brain science. Like, how do you do that? That's why the book is called Knowing How. You want to do it. You know you could or should do it, but you don't know how to do it.
Do you have a difference or do you notice a difference between the way men and women do this work or how they're affected?
It is super. Yes, I do. So what I find is women come in and they seem to, and I hate to generalize, but typically what I see is that women are much more feeling. They really want to get the information, but not the information as much as they're down in the feelings and the memory, and they're willing to discharge this emotion out of the body through crying or whatever it takes. Men, not as much. But the interesting thing is that the reason men like the program is they like the linear. Because a male and a female brain is different. A female brain is much more of a circular thinker. And, you know, you think about back in the Neanderthal, the hunter and the gatherer. Well, the gatherer is gathering and taking care of the fire and taking care of the kids and picking the berries and gathering and doing multiple things, right, for survival. And the male species has a different kind of brain. It functions much more linear. See it, go, take it, bring it, you know. And so women like the program because it's circular and it really hits so many different areas. And men like the program because it's like 20 concepts. Do this, then that, then that, then that. And they're just like, oh. So the women want to do the workshops and the guys want to come and do the refresher support group. Mostly to just hear those concepts again and utilize them. There are tools in that tool shed. Right. They like that.
It's a lot. It's mm-hmm. And that's very interesting. I'm curious too, when you first started in as a clinician in the mental health field, how it's changed over these 30 years and how there wasn't anything like this when you were starting. Am I correct in that assumption?
It hasn't been that long. I don't know, it has kind of, sort of, but mainstream people, when I use the word neuroplasticity, I would probably say 7 out of 10 people are not quite sure what that means, right? And so let me put it right out there now for those, you know, for the people that don't know what it means, those 7 people, is neuroplasticity is what we have discovered that the brain can create new neural pathways. So what this work is about is looking at the circuitry, because you got a lot of good things from your parent, even if they taught you how to survive, even if they taught you how to bust through the grit. One way or another, you did get some good things from your parents. And so we want to leave that circuitry alone. You know, like for myself, you know, my mother was an artist, and so I like to do art. I like to write. That's one of the art. She was a super intelligent, and she was a voracious reader. She was also a drug addict. But hey, anyways, I got a lot of really good stuff from her, and that I don't want to touch. But there's a whole circuitry board in the brain that has all kinds of wiring that is about I'm not good enough and my only value is when I'm taking care of sick people and I'm insecure. You know, all of these other things when my mother was acting out in her drug addiction, it was a whole different thing. I'm unlovable. I'm not good enough. There's something bad and wrong about me. Too much of this, not enough of that, right? So I got that circuitry running, and what we want to do is go in there and we want to replace that circuitry. Leave that other one alone, but go in there. And that's the power of neuroplasticity, the power of learning something and repeating it. And with time and repetition, that's how you wired. With time and repetition, that's how you rewire. But you got to have content to rewire too. And that's what the 20 Concepts does for you.
Hey, if you're just tuning in, this is Open Air. I'm your host, Don Newton. We're talking with Julie Valenti. We're talking about her book, Knowing How, 20 Concepts to Rewire the Brain. So let's dive into some of these concepts.
All right.
Because there's a lot here. And like you said, it's how many pages? We've got
200 pages.
It's, but see, it's not that big a deal, you guys. It's really not that hard.
It's
she's got it dialed in for sure.
I like to steal a phrase from the 12-step community, and that is, it's simple, but it's not easy.
That's very accurate.
It's very accurate.
And I think we make things so difficult, or we make it more complicated than it needs to be. The human piece, right. We like to just kind of make things real fussy and, you know.
So the first five, so I'm going to break the concepts into basic little clusters. And I'm going to say the first five concepts are about what you downloaded in your childhood, what you learned about yourself and about attachment, about what a man does, what a woman does, what they do together, right? That's just, you're just a sponge and you're taking it in. So the first five concepts are all about that. The next five concepts are all about how you took that information and went out into the world and recreated it. Now, why would you do that? Why would you take, you know, that mess and bring it into your life? Well, a little brain ad right here, right now, and that is the brain is a survival organ. Its job is to keep the organism alive. And if you are alive, don't do anything different. So the brain is literally forcing you to go and repeat these patterns. And here's the part in relationships that is so disastrous and why we have the divorce rate we have is it wants you to attach to the same kind of attachment figures, i.e. unavailable, that you did in your childhood. The brain does not care if you're happy. It wants you alive. You are alive. Go attach to what you know you can survive. It's not fun. So the next five concepts are about the reenactment and why you do it and how you do it. Okay, that's the first 10. Now, the next 10 concepts, those are the tools. That's the new wiring. That's what you want to begin to use. You're going to use them all. It's all going to go into memory, but we want it in working memory, and that's sort of the rewiring part. I'm going to go down the list of concepts.
Yes,
if that's,
please.
If that's
absolutely
the deal, Dawn. And I'll let the first five first, and then I'll okay. So the first concept is what I call the platform and the foundation that the entire program is built on. Without this, you're not going to be able to do this work. And so concept number one is understanding your brain and body. I just explained how the brain works. I just talked about conscious, subconscious. I just talked about survival brain, talked about neural pathways, trigger. Well, I haven't gotten to triggers yet, but we're going to get there. Anyways, you have to have that. So that's why it's concept number one. Everything else is built upon that. And nobody's going to be surprised when I tell you what concept two is. It's attachment, because you have to survive. Brain, body is a survival organism, right? And you have to attach in order to survive, in order to live. So we're going to talk about attachment. And surprisingly enough, maybe you had neglect in your childhood. That's going to give you a certain kind of attachment system. Maybe you had abuse. That's going to give you another type. Maybe you had an inconsistency like I had. Sometimes my mother was, interestingly enough, when my mother was loaded, she was amazing. She was connected. She was teaching. She was involved. She was playing. She was making us Barbie clothes. Anyways, but oh my gosh, she developed a tolerance to her drugs. It was a prescription. And so when she had to wait for her prescription, then she was angry and bitter and nervous and falling asleep and irritable. So one minute she's like, you're gorgeous, you're wonderful, you're everything, I love you so much. And then the next, who knew? It was, get away from me, I can't stand the sight of you, why don't you leave me alone, why stop asking? You know, so inconsistent, that's going to develop into a different kind of attachment disorder. So there's four different types. There's dependent. There's avoidant, There is ambivalent, which I suffered from. And then we don't really talk about the fourth because that's secure and nobody reads the book or comes to see me if they have a secure attachment type. So attachment is the second concept. Third concept. Victim, perpetrator, rescuer triangle. Children are victims. They can't leave. I talked earlier, you can't fight or flight. You're there. Perpetrators, that's, you know, I could have put parent because I'm not trying to say that your parents were, you know, criminals, but although some of them were. But no, I'm not really going there. But just use the word perpetrator as they sort of perpetrated the situation, right? And then rescuer. And as a child, you're looking for that rescuer. Is it going to be a grandma? Is it going to be the other parent? Is it going to be the neighbor? Is it going to be a teacher? You know, and so we're looking for rescuers. Later on in life, we use rescuers as drugs, alcohol, you know, sex, relationships. Okay, concept number four. Four, locus of control. That is a developmental stage. We all go through it. We're meant to transition out of it, but you need good, careful, attentive parenting. Locus of control is a developmental phase where you believe, not thinking yet, too little, but you believe, and if you are thinking, it's ABCs and 1, 2, 3s, but you believe that you make everything happen. Now, this is a big problem, because if I'm making everything happen, you know, put my tooth under the pillow and the tooth fairy comes or blowing out my candle, right? If I'm doing all that and things are happening because of that, then I also am making the bad things happen. And now if I make the bad things happen and I can't make them not happen, then I create in my belief system that there's something bad and wrong about me. And if you never develop out of that locus of control, you're walking around with a belly full of deep subconscious, there's something bad and wrong about me. And man, you will sabotage anything good in your life running from that. Because I'm telling you, the subconscious part of the brain runs about 80% of everything you do. And your thinking's only pitching in about 20%. And then concept number five is magical thinking. It's kind of like locus of control because it is the childlike thinking. But I'm referencing in the book, wishing, hoping, praying, believing, fantasizing that things are going to be different, but not doing anything to really make things different. So those are the first five concepts. I'm just going to keep going, Dawn.
Yes, please.
Yeah, just like...
Oh, no, it's perfect.
Here we go. All right. Concept number six. This is how we reenact it. This is how we bring it into our adult life. Well, how is that cluster, that circuitry going to get reactivated? Number one, you're going to have triggers. Remember, it's a memory organism. So, tone of voice, a certain smell, a certain phraseology, the way somebody looks. These are triggers, criticism, somebody. You know, I have everybody tell me, what is your trigger? Criticism, again, tone of voice. So it activates that pathway. So you're back there again. Now you're in the PTSD. Now you're back in that childhood. Concept number seven, loyalty to the perpetrator. I already spoke a little bit of that. But we will treat ourselves pretty much exactly the same way as we were treated in childhood. We might try to do something different. We almost always will regress back to sabotaging and doing things that look a lot like what we experienced in our childhood. Reenactment, loyalty to the perpetrator, you can do yourself. Right? That's your self-talk. Reenactment, now you're going to go find an attachment figure. You're going to go find somebody in your world to represent that terrible, awful, not paying attention to me, not caring about me, not reflecting back to me that I'm great. Now I'm going to go out and I'm going to get somebody to do that with me. This is where so many failed relationships happen. Now remember, I go into depth on each one of these. So I'm just like giving you the quick little definition, but there's so much more to read about reenactment and loyalty. And concept number nine, hiding feelings. We were taught as children not to have feelings, or at least not to express them. So we cried. We were called a crybaby. We got angry, and it was like, don't you dare. Nope. We got, we said we were afraid and we were called a scaredy cat, right? I remember in my childhood laughing and giggling in the back seat of the car, and my mother was like, "You stop that right now." So I couldn't even be happy. We couldn't express these feelings. And so now we're people say, "How do you feel?" And they'll tell me what they're thinking. And it's like, wait a minute, that's not a feeling. So we've got a sort of, we continue to hide our feelings. And how do you hide your feelings? A lot of times, drugs and alcohol work, shopping works. I mean, there's a multitude. Put a screen in front of your face. That'll work. You don't have feelings, and you're not expressing them. You're not in touch with them. Eventually, concept number 10, you are going to find something that works best. Every time you go to it, it takes away all those feelings of confusion and sadness and anger and fear. And you find the one that works best. You go to it again and again and again. Pretty soon it develops into an addiction. Now you're going to it. Even though you know it hurts you and it hurts the people that love you, you're compelled to do it anyways. Now you're in trouble. I mean, you're in trouble right from the get-go. Come on. But now it starts to manifest into something else, and you're going to a treatment facility, or you're doing, you know, and you've got all this stuff going on that's facing and looking at the addiction and so on and so forth. To me, you go through that process, of course, but it's just another distraction from the real problem, right? The problem, of course, yeah, overusing and overdrinking, that's going to create a whole bunch of problems. But the deepest problem is that's the solution to the deeper problem. Concept number 11, the problem isn't the real problem. The real problem is a childhood attachment disruption. So those are, you know, pretty much how we reenact. So we're at 10, 11. Now we're going to start going to our tools. Concept number 12, feel your feelings, right? Your feelings are there for a reason. If you're angry, there's likely to be some kind of an injustice going on, some kind of a violation or a betrayal. Your anger is a cluster of hormones that is asking you to take an action. So when we talk about processing feelings, I'm talking about knowing that if I have anger, I need to have evidence, and then I need to do something, and maybe that something is setting a boundary, creating a limit, telling someone, hey, I don't like that when you talk to me that way. Please don't do it. You have just now used the energy of anger to discharge it out. And now you have relieved yourself of it, and you've taken the appropriate action. Fear is the same thing. If you're experiencing fear, whole different cluster of hormones, but when you're feeling fear, there's a good chance something is going on that could hurt you, harm you, or some. Look for the data. Is that true? Is that happening? Your fear is asking you to take a step back. Look at what's going on, or hold in place, or proceed with caution. It's a good thing. People go like, oh, if there's only four feelings, anger, fear, sadness, and joy, how come there's three bad and only one good? And I say, they're all good. They're all coming from your survival brain. They're all down in the limbic system. They're there to activate the organism to be healthy and to survive. So that's why we have them. They're all good. Anger, set a boundary. Fear, take a step back. Pain, sadness, grieve. What's missing? What's gone? Is there a way that you can bring it something back? Something's gone. Yes, allow your body to discharge the energy. Your body wants to cry, weep, and other countries wail, right? But your body is asking you to take an action so that it can go back to homeostasis and be healthy again. So a lot of people, they start to cry in the session and they start apologizing. I'm like, trust me, better out than in. because we repress these feelings and we hold them back, we stuff them down, and then now we're talking about body bears the burden, ulcers, heart disease, right? Fibromyalgia from the constriction of trying to hold these feelings and this energy in your body. Feelings are emotion. Emotion is energy in motion. Something is going on in the environment. It's activating the neurological system. Neurological system is activating the endocrine system. Endocrine system is spewing out the hormones appropriate for action. The circulatory system is picking it up and distributing it into the muscular and skeletal system. And you're supposed to take an action. I think that so many people are so confused about what a feeling is. And that's why deep and profound knowledge and understanding so that we can make the kinds of changes to live the kind of life that you were talking about. Authentic and great, big, and beautiful. Live a large life, right? So concept number 14. I'm looking at the clock. This one's so powerful.
This is amazing.
So I say, you know, when I do concepts and I'm talking about them, I'm like, I love this one. And then, and then I say, well, actually, I love them all, right? Because they're such a cluster.
They all uphold each other. It's a chain link fence.
Okay. So I'm going to keep going. Number 14, the thinking, feeling, behavior loop. Here's the deal. If you are having a feeling, it is either being generated by something in the environment, activating the neurological system, but here's the power of the brain. You can activate that neurological system by thinking something is happening or could happen. Let's take fear. If you start thinking something scary is going, something bad could happen, you are going to activate that same cluster of hormones. Now you're going to have fear hormones raging through the system that's going to ask you, and then you've got a behavior, but it's just a scary story you told yourself. There was no data. And now you've got the whole system activated. You're getting ready to take an action, but there's no evidence. And believe me, if you're taking that action against somebody, they are like, what the, what? Like, what is going on with you? And it's because you're telling yourself a story. Same thing with anger. Oh, they did this or that. This is just stories. So the thinking, feeling, behavior loop can get you in a lot of trouble. But it can also create a great, big, amazing life because the same works when you think positive thoughts. And, all right, tell yourself a story. Life is big. It's beautiful. It's grand. It's meant to be celebrated. I'm a good person, and I like who I am. That's going to activate a whole bunch of feel-good hormones, serotonin, endorphin, oxytocin, and then guess what your behavior is going to be like? It's going to be kind and generous, and you're going to start creating, you know, when people say you create your life, this is the concept that'll prove it every single time. Okay, I'll keep going. Concept number 15, anchors to triggers. Remember I talked earlier in that thing, that your memory organism, and you'll recognize something, and all of a sudden you'll be have a visceral experience. You have to be able to anchor that. So you want to anchor that. You want to know what your triggers are, and we do that work together. You know what your triggers are based on your childhood, based on your past relationships. You know what sets you off. You know what activates you. And so when you start to feel your face getting a little hot, your eyes starting to well up with tears, you immediately use your thinking brain. That's your anchor. What your first thing that you're going to do is you're going to take a deep breath and drop your shoulders because you're going to communicate to the body. The body's going to communicate to the brain back that nothing dangerous is happening because you don't deep breathe and relax when some. So we're using the system to create that anchor. Next anchor is like maybe remove yourself from the situation. The next anchor is think. What is happening and what is it reminding me of? And once you do that piece, you are now out of the limbic surge, out of the emotional surge. Everything starts to calm down. The intelligent brain is back online. And I hope you got these concepts there to use so that you can communicate effectively. By doing that work, what we're able to do is modulate. We're able to turn down the activation so that you can use your thinking brain to negotiate and navigate the situation. So after you do that piece of work and you're anchored and you're now able to modulate, you go into the ability of desensitization. That's number 17. That means that the things that used to trigger you just don't trigger you anymore, because through time and repetition of anchoring and modulating and anchoring and modulating, communicating effectively, you no longer are flipping out. You know, you're no longer, I said flipping out. That's not really very nice.
Oh, sometimes.
But
it does feel that way.
It's a little bit of a flip-flop. And then we go to number 18, integration. Integration is, people often say, well, this is a great program and I like every part of it, but how come you don't have a spiritual component to your program? And I say, what about integration? That's where you rise above sort of the things that are happening in your life. That's where you begin to stay out of either or, us, them, now, then, you know, and you start coming into the middle, you know, and this is where sort of the chakra and the Eastern philosophy comes in, where there's that acceptance, there's that middle way, there's that something in between these opposites, right? Integration is the, you know, where you kind of start getting to, right? Desensitizing, integration, this ability to sort of accept and be calm and see things differently, not one big dramatic thing or the other big dramatic thing. It's just such a beautiful, calming, soothing sort of concept. Number 19, you can't do any of it without number 19. You got to tolerate the discomfort of doing things differently. You got to know concept number one. You've got to know that you got some hard wiring going on here, and the organism's not going to like you making these changes, right? Survival organism, your brain really doesn't want you to start making changes. That's why people go like, oh, it's really uncomfortable to do that. I don't want to talk that way, right? It doesn't feel natural. It's like, yeah, no, you don't want that discomfort you feel, tolerate it, push through it. Because when you get to the other side of it and the brain recognizes that this is life enhancing, more exciting, more peaceful, it quickly will adapt and you will no longer. Then it's going to be uncomfortable not to do this work, not to speak this way, and not to behave this way in your world. And then finally, concept number 20 is adult responsibility is non-negotiable, which basically means adult responsibility is the ability to respond as a mature, intelligent adult to whatever is happening in your life, self-care, relationships. It is again, sort of the end result. It's what you are capable of doing and becoming by doing this work.
Can you do this book without the help of a clinician or a professional?
In the book, after each concept, I have a list of questions. Ask yourself this. Ask yourself this. Did you, right? So you can do the process. I recommend doing it. I do a book study where I get a group of people and we dive into each one of these concepts. Everybody's sharing and learning it. And you really, it's so helpful to do it with a guide. Remember I said earlier, I'm going to go with you. We're going to go back. And to be able to do that with somebody who knows this work frontwards and backwards, created the work, right, preferably, or at least have trained somebody to do it. And nobody works at Wisdom and Recovery that doesn't do all of this themselves first.
Oh, I would highly recommend working with one of your clinicians and doing this work. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, that feeling piece of it, there's that mourning piece, the grief piece, because you're going to be letting go of a lot of trauma that was never yours to begin with. But you're going to be letting go some of yourself, but renewing yourself at the same time.
Right.
So it's quite a journey. Mm-hmm. What does this work mean to you? We just have a few minutes left.
Well, for me, I believe everybody comes into this world with a purpose. We don't know what that purpose this is. But if you can make a contribution, I say try to be as much of a contributor as you are a consumer. and if you can make a contribution, if you can share some of this with someone, say you do this, do the book study and read this and do this work, then everybody that comes in contact with you is going to be affected in a positive way. So you're always making a contribution. So what it means to me is to be able to have survived, gone through what I went through for a reason. There was a reason that was on my path. There's a reason that's on my journey. I don't look at my childhood any longer. I look at it as something that gave me the ability to know on deep and profound levels what other people could be suffering. And then I've got the pathway. I found it. Follow me, you know. So to be able to do that and have that be your life's purpose and to alleviate a lot of suffering of humankind, I can lay my head down on my pillow at night and sleep well.
And Julie, really quick, where can we find the book?
You can find the book on Amazon. It's called Knowing How. It is written by me, Julie Valenti. You can get it on Amazon. My contact information is in the book. You can contact me. I'll send you a book. You know, so I hope that people really want to do this. I hope I've stimulated some curiosity, and I just want everybody to live a great, big, beautiful life.
Well, I appreciate you being here. It's been such an honor and a pleasure. Thank you.
Oh, it's been fantastic. Thank you, Dawn.
Open Air is written, produced, and hosted by Dawn Newton.